Michael Flatley and Charlie Daniels, ladies
together,
and gentlemen.
Together, yep. Ah, the devil went down to Dublin. All right.
The devil went down to Dublin. Yep. You heard Ray.
He played his fiddle, son.
No, actually, what was that? Who was that? Okay.
He doesn't remember, he says. And frankly, we don't really care that
David
much.
David Hopper doesn't have the endorsement for this one.
No.
Better than most.
There's the mic.
Good morning. Welcome to our panel for this Friday morning. Very nice to have you with us. And let me introduce our panel to you. And it's a real pleasure that you've joined us. So let's go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning to you, Joseph.
Hello. Also, newsman Ray Graff joins us.
Hello.
And political consultant. No, I'm sorry. It's our associate editor. That's right. Our political consultant was stuck in Connecticut.
Only off the record.
That's right. Our our wonderful, wonderful associate editor for the Times Union newspaper, Mike Spain, is here.
Good morning.
Nice to have you. Thank you very much.
Happy to be here.
Thank you for saying yes when I wrote you at a very odd hour.
Speaking of odd hours, you step all night reading the New York Times.
Yeah,
I don't understand how Joe does it, because it really is amazing.
I think he's up 24 hours a day reading.
Information, yeah.
That's the only explanation.
Yeah. It was sort of, I started watching Game of Thrones. I ended up reading this new Jim Shepard novel, a guy over at Williams, an amazing Holocaust novel.
Oh.
And then I was up to like 2:30, 3 o'clock reading that thing. And then...
why not read the New York Times? It's out.
There you go. So we added some stories. So we have some stuff to talk about. Let's get to it. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will, of course, love to hear from you. Also, you can go to WAMC.org/roundtable, and you can catch us there as well. All right, so let us now begin our conversation, and we begin with the situation in Baltimore, which obviously goes on, and the report has come out as to what happened. Although we still don't really know a lot, do we?
No.
Right, Mike?
The prosecutor was given
the report.
They received the report,
yes.
And there's been a lot leaking out about it, and there's been a lot of speculation about how Freddie Gray, was injured while he was in a police van. And, you know, with that, I think the problem when you have a report that's anticipated and then it's not made public right away, people begin to provide their own explanations on what it could be, and perhaps some of those explanations are correct and some are out of line. Who knows? So it generates more speculation, which isn't helpful sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the real question is there a cover-up going on? And there is at least some prima facie sense on at least many of the people who are objecting to the police that the story keeps changing. That we don't know what's happening. All of a sudden, they pull a law and order, and they get a guy who's in the same cell, in this case, the same truck, who in order to, you know, the speculation on their part is in order to get a lighter sentence, says anything you want. I'll say anything
Those are always somewhat suspect when a person in custody who stands to gain from his testimony says something. And yet, there's been a lot of speculation about the phenomenon where police may put a prisoner in the back of a van, and if the person is unruly, they may have a way of dealing with it by swerving right and left, going over potholes, taking sharp turns, making quick stops. And you got to think these prisoners are generally have handcuffs on. And I think Freddie Gray was not seat belted in the
Well,
back
I
of
guess
van.
That's still what is going to be. The two things to come out of the report. One was that of what you mentioned, Alan, and the other is the fact that there was a stop apparently that had not been known.
The famous fourth stop.
Yeah, so they did not know about that. This whole rough ride thing was interesting. There's an article in the New York Times.
Yeah.
In Baltimore, they call it a rough ride. In Philadelphia, they have another name for it that hints at the age of the practice, a nickel ride. A reference to old-time amusement park rides that cost 5 cents. Other cities call them joy rides. Their slang terms mask a dark tradition of police misconduct in which suspects seated or lying face down and in handcuffs in the back of a police wagon are jolted and battered by an intentionally rough and bumpy ride that can do as much damage as a police baton without an officer having to administer a blow. The question is that is it enough? Is this quote-unquote rough ride enough to sever a spinal cord?
Right.
And that's what
you're talking about a broken neck. If you
right.
smash your head into a metal wall, now I'm speculating. I have no idea.
Right.
But
well, all of this is.
Smash your head into a metal wall at 30 miles an hour, chances are you could do damage.
Well, yeah, but, you know, what's so interesting is the less information you have, the more the people in our biz can speculate.
Absolutely.
So they can do exactly what we're doing right now.
Well, no. I think everything right. we're saying here is appropriate. But I do know that I read one news source where they had talked to a guy who is basically a brain surgeon and said, can you get this, you know, can you break your back from, you know, from what happened there? And the guy said, no. Unlikely. So because there is such paucity of information, anything sort of can go and anybody can suggest anything. When I taught at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice 1,000 years ago, I had a guy in my class who I thought he was kidding, said that when he left, he had to go back to Rikers, where they keep the prisoners, because a guy had been acting unruly. So we don't know. In other words, that's come out since then that they had gangs of officers who would go in and do their own administer their own form
discipline.
Of justice.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So I just think that there is a possibility if you take the guy because he looked you in the eye and you didn't like it, and then you ride him around in a truck and for one of those rides Joe was just talking about. That this is a sort of extrajudicial punitiveness. This can be. And we know it has existed in the past.
So the lawyer for the Freddie Gray's family says that our position is something happened in the van. We just don't know what. Also, as the Times points out, even if it happened in the van, it does not necessarily point toward an intentional rough ride.
Exactly.
And so these are some of the things, and that seems, which gets to the heart of the matter of how do you prove something like that.
It's completely possible that, Freddie Gray was handcuffed in the back of the van, and the van took a necessary turn, and he might have been, you know, sitting or standing in a way that would cause him to fall, and he could, you know, all of that is, I mean, we may never know, but we
right.
could get more information that would help people find out.
We do know, the one thing we do know so far, according to what, as you say, has leaked from the report, is that there is no, he was not seatbelted. He should have been.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what, it's one of the things that we do know. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we'll get to a few letters. We'll get to some other issues. We'll talk about other stuff. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. We will be back after the short break. It's Natalie McMaster and Donna Leahy. Off
oh, that's the music?
Album one that we're listening to. Very cool. So
yeah.
Thank you for that.
Well, I'll jot that down.
Here, I have it jotted down
no,
for you.
No, actually, you know what? I'll jot it down.
All right.
I'll
don't care for that.
Later.
You know, I'll email it to you and I'll
yeah.
have a link
Ray,
to that.
Ray likes
thing.
More.
I'll instant message it over to you in a minute.
Sure.
Ray likes dingle music.
For those of you listening at home, boys and girls, that's jazz, according to Alan.
Yeah.
All right.
Remember, he plays banjo, boys and girls.
Let's go on. We have a couple letters, and then we'll move on.
We
to
do,
the topic,
yeah,
yes.
we do. That's no good. Somebody wrote to us and said, I sent this yesterday, but it was not read. Perhaps, .. Two rules were broken.
Okay.
The first rule was that there was no name attached to it. I take personal umbrage to
yeah. By the way, and this is actually not their fault. What happens is that they're using a texting service, a text to email service.
Yeah, mobile.
Right, and what it does not give your identifier, it only gives your phone number in that, unless you have it in your contacts. So if people do that and they want them read, just put your name and say from Steve from
yeah.
You know,
because
Alice,
if they don't, then, I'm not reading.
Otherwise, we don't know. And I don't right. think it's their fault. They don't realize they're doing it. But it's that's the way it comes into
and us. And then the second thing that was wrong of it, they said, I sent this yesterday. No read. I'm sending it again today, but there's no message.
Okay, there was nothing there.
Yeah, well, it's the message from yesterday.
Well, what am I going to go look up?
Oh, okay. Well, so you didn't get that because that came in there as well. But anyway,
no,
okay, go ahead.
I didn't see it.
All right. So what else do we have?
I don't know. I don't know. Is there anything else?
I thought there were other letters. Maybe I was wrong.
Well, maybe. Oh, so Margaret, who checks in every once in a while,
this worked in rehearsal.
Yeah.
The George Washington Bridge fiasco may come to a light. The title letter is Chris Christie. Hopefully, David Wildstein will talk the truth as he is to take a plea. He is not the lone traffic jam man. Chris Christie may become unraveled.
All right, so let's talk about this. A former Port Authority official and ally of Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey is expected to plead guilty today to the first charges stemming from the 16-month federal investigation into the George Washington Bridge Lane closings scandal. The U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, Paul Fishman, announced early on Friday that there would be a proceeding of interest in a criminal matter related to the closings at 11 a.m. in front of Judge Susan Wiginton of U.S. District Court in Newark. Mr. Fishman will hold a news conference at 1 p.m. to discuss the investigation, breaking his long silence over that inquiry. So that is what she's talking about.
Well,
so.
No, that's right. That's right. What she's talking about. And the question is, will David Wildstein or Stein, depending on how you pronounce it, will he throw Chris Christie under the bus?
A high school classmate of Mr. Christie.
And that would be quite a throw.
Who ordered the closing of several access lanes to the bridge in September 2013, is expected to plead guilty before the judge. According to people familiar with the case, the U.S. Attorney's Office declined to comment on those or other details beyond the news conference.
Well, whether he throws Christie under the bus and accuses him of being aware of this political sabotage, whatever it was, involving the closure of the George Washington Bridge, it's going to bring up the story and
can't help
put that
Christie.
In people's minds. It cannot help Christie while he's up in New Hampshire trying to raise money and profile.
Hey, something goes wrong at this radio station. It's not my fault. I'm going to be held responsible. I mean, that's just the way
sure.
it is. That's
sure.
part of the excess, part of the problem of command.
Somebody was having trouble with their texting. Alan, is that your fault?
Yeah, probably. probably. And also, there are people who are opining, saying that if he doesn't name Christie, then Christie is off the hook. I don't think so. I think you're right, Mike. So do you want me to continue to read or not, Joe?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Dan said...
Assuming we're done with the Chris Christie story.
Anybody else?
No. Okay.
Irene says, how can progressives allow Dan Donovan to skate to Congress without a fight? He has baggage and is all about big business. The election is in New York City on May 5th. Well, Irene, I would tell you that progressives may not control all the politics of Staten Island.
Very little, actually.
Yeah. Staten Island is a Republican place.
Yes, it is. Yes.
I've interviewed Dan Donovan on this radio station in the past, when he was running, I guess.
Attorney General.
State Attorney General, yeah. Right. And he's impressive. He speaks well. Sounds like he has a sort of balanced line. And he's going to win.
It looks like that.
Right? Okay. And
do we have anything on topic?
yeah, right. What's the lunch special at the...
Andrew says, more this morning, riot or uprising? Maybe Warren's discussion on the roundtable. I have never heard so much discussion with respect to the wording of the reporting. All the best on this glorious day. See? That's what he said. And Paul says... From the video, I have seen bike cops apprehend him. Maybe they ran him down, causing the initial injury, which was worsened during the rough ride. And that is exactly what we've been talking about, that since we don't know anything, everybody has a different theory on what might have been.
It would seem plausible.
Okay, and Tina says on the same subject, the police narratives involving abuses are consistently unreliable. This latest so-called leak seems a classic fallacy, a red herring. The big picture is that Freddie Gray should never have been arrested. Since when is eye contact a crime? And again, you have to take the narrative for what it's worth, that somebody said that that's what happened and that that's what happened. But it may have been and maybe not. So that is the red herring from Tina. And Jay says, the man who was in the van with Freddie Gray has been featured on the local news in Baltimore saying he did not tell the police that he heard Freddie Gray bang his head on the walls. He said he heard banging around like a body being tossed back and forth. When they arrived at the police station, he heard them trying to rouse Freddie Gray by calling his name repeatedly, and they were unsuccessful. Okay, and then it goes on way, way too long. I guess there is that person. I don't know. Here it is. Okay. This is what you were talking about, the person we just had the phone number. From Stacy, doesn't the fact that we have people of color in leadership positions in Baltimore in the U.S. demonstrate there have been great strides against racism? Why does the panel keep speaking of lack of opportunity for people of color? Now, that's a good one.
Well, this morning on MSNBC, there was some data about certain neighborhoods, minority neighborhoods of Baltimore, where the life expectancy is lower than the life expectancy in North Korea. And in some smaller sections, it was lower than the life expectancy in Syria. Indicating,
or in Russia, where they drink themselves to death.
Yeah, I mean, indicating that it's a hopeless dead end and regarded that by the residents. So
well,
a lot of work needs to be done.
Look, to Stacy, you're right. There's no question that we have moved to a place where we have a black president, a black mayor of Baltimore, a black police chief. It's all good. But when you take the numbers, the statistics about education, about wealth, about all the rest of this stuff, no question.
We are going to take a break there. We're going to come back and go to a news break. When we come back, we will go on to other topics. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, or WAMC.org/roundtable. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I want to introduce the panel, and then we'll get on to topics and letters and all of that good stuff. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. I just want you to know how much I love the music. Roselle and I love Ireland. We've been there several times, and we're going to keep going back because of the music.
All right. Made an official statement. Newsman Ray Graff is here. Any political statements you want to make about
Absolutely. I'm all for Ireland existing.
All right, good. And and let's go to the Irishman, Mike Spain.
Ah, the top of the morning to you.
The rest of the day to yourself, sir. All right. Do you have we have more letters that we didn't get to before? Is that
Yeah, I suppose we do. We definitely do. It seems to me that throwing the words of a highly suspect witness is just there to muddy the waters. Gray showed signs of injury on video as he's being loaded into the van. Where he was loaded into the van is very close to the police station. He was brought to 2 minutes away in one report I read. Yet it took a half an hour to get him there with multiple stops, not all of which the police in question reported at first. It was clear that something was done inappropriately. That's what he says. I'm just reading your letters. And from Jay Holly, the man who was in the van with Freddie Gray has been featured on the local news in Baltimore saying he did not tell the police.
Oh, you read that.
I thought so. It was beginning to sound familiar. It was a little familiar. We read that one, too. And I don't know. So that's the end of that. I don't have anything else to say.
Okay.
I'm not good at this.
All right. Let's go to other issues and find out. I'm sure there's other things that we can discuss. So
yeah, sure.
We'll go there. When it comes to the story that I sent out earlier this morning was the Patriot Act story, which I found to be interesting. The Patriot Act faces revisions backed by both parties after more than a decade of wrenching national debate over the intrusiveness of government intelligence agencies. A bipartisan wave of support has gathered to sharply limit the federal government's sweeps of phone and internet records. On Thursday, a bill that would overhaul the Patriot Act and curtail the so-called metadata surveillance exposed by Edward Snowden was overwhelmingly passed by the House Judiciary Committee and was heading to almost certain passage in that chamber this month.
Oh, I have a theory on this.
Okay.
That is this, that when an event happens like 9/11, or the bombing of Pearl Harbor. All kinds of things are done in the name of public safety. You know, the Japanese, some Italians interned. And then years later, we say, no, we shouldn't have done that. Korematsu, the United States, and we shouldn't have done that. Even if they say, well, you could have done it, whatever. So things change. So we got 9/11. We got the Patriot Act. Some courageous people saw it coming, saw the potential devastation of civil liberties, voted against it. Very few people, though. And now, all of them are saying, in my mind, hey, this could happen to me. Those guys could be listening to my phone calls. And that includes Republicans and Democrats and everybody else. And they say, this isn't a good thing. And also, you know, with the revelations of Snowden, and that's very important, by the way, Joe, when you think about this, that Snowden, without that information, maybe this wouldn't be happening, right?
I mean, this I predict there will be an evolution of how we look at Snowden, you know, who was a pariah immediately after he released all that information. And now he is credited with a revision of the Patriot Act that, that ratchets down the government's ability to go in and collect data really without any, warrants or just kind of mull through people's phone cell data, et cetera, et cetera. So there may be a time when the majority of people look at Snowden as having been a positive contributor to our civil liberties.
Well, if anybody ever listens to me, from the very beginning, I've been saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really truly believe that you can't have democracy without information. I've said it 1,000 times. He supplied us a whole bunch of information that nobody would have known about.
Not compromise the U.S. position.
No.
Unlike...
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, in the sense that, the WikiLeaks, which was not him, did reveal information that named names of, foreign agents, et cetera, and many regard as having compromised the safety of U.S. personnel overseas, et cetera. But Snowden just revealed what was going on. And provided, details of that. And in the process of making those revelations, Daniel Ellsberg, the person who leaked the Pentagon Papers, was looked at as, somebody opposed to the U.S. back in the 60s. And it turns out, today he's regarded as somebody who helped to speed up the end of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam.
This means, of course, that there isn't extra legal stuff going on. I worked for a congressman who used to hang up the phone and say into the phone, so what do you think, J. Edgar? Did you like my conversation? So in other words, there's always a certain amount of extra legal stuff, and we don't know really how much there is, but I suspect there's a good deal of it. But this doesn't deal with that.
What's interesting to me about this revision of the Patriot Act is it's happening over the objections of Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader. And also interesting about it to me is that the one of the guys who's helping to round up opposition to this revision, basically who's against, against this new law, is Tom Cotton, the senator who was, while in Congress last year, supporting this very bill, but he's now kind of this right-hand person to Senator Mitch McConnell. So it's still mired in politics. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, I think that's right, Mike. These guys, they hold their finger up in the air and see which way the wind is blowing in terms of their own base constituency. It gets so complicated. I mean, you get a majority leader who has the absolute power of making sure that bills don't get brought up if they don't want them to. But he has a particular political need in his home state. But he says, well, I can't help it if everybody else is going to vote the other way. And well, that kind of stuff goes on all the time.
Yeah. The interesting other interesting element of this is that the Tea Party is very much in favor of this revision of the Patriot Act. They're very opposed to the government having that broad power to go in and look at all your data. And they're even in conjunction with the White House on it. I mean, it's a broad support for this.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Mike, let's talk a little bit about, we have a few minutes before we go over to the news break, or the, I'm sorry, another break. Let's go over to a discussion about marijuana, medical marijuana, and marijuana in the Capital Region.
That's right. You know, on Monday, the State Health Department began accepting applications from companies who want permission to be one of the five that are allowed to grow and distribute medical marijuana in New York State. A Plattsburgh company wants to open a medical marijuana dispensary in the town of Clifton Park in southern Saratoga County. They're going to present their plans at a meeting Monday night in Town Hall, and we'll learn more about that. And you know, the supervisor of the town of Clifton Park, Phil Barrett, says there's nothing in the zoning law that prevents it. So it will be interesting to see if they go along with it or how they react to it, because it's the first in the Capital Region. You know, just to remind you, the New York laws will allow only specially trained doctors to prescribe marijuana for only certain eligible medical conditions. And you won't be able to smoke marijuana. You'll have to take it in pill form or in vapor form. And interesting, too, this week it came out that former mayor of Albany, Jerry Jennings, is an advisor to one of the companies that wants to do business in medical marijuana. He's not naming the business, but his pitch is that the federal government really has to give some guidelines to states that are using medical marijuana, you know, that will recognize that you can use, you know, credit cards and banks can handle transactions of these companies in states where there's medical marijuana, and in states like Colorado and Washington State where recreational marijuana is legal. A lot of it, transactions have to be done in cash, which does impede how people, are able to get access to it. And that's because banks are afraid that the federal government doesn't recognize marijuana in any way, legalized marijuana in any form, and they don't want to get involved in it. So he's pushing for broader federal recognitions of that that would relieve some of the pressure, so they don't have to carry big bags of cash around, essentially, and armored trucks to these medical marijuana dispensaries when they do open in New York State.
It is interesting that they drafted, you got this Colorado experience, which seems to be going well, there is such a reticence on the part of the people who put this bill in, I guess including the governor, to really just allow marijuana in the state, although the foot is in the door, the genie is out of the bottle, and once that happens, obviously it'll progress and you'll get more. But I wonder, I mean, if you're a Clifton Park resident, which of course I'm not, I'm across the border there, one wonders whether they can find themselves in opposition to their constituents in that town who will show up at the town meeting and say, we don't want to, just because of the way it's always been done, we don't want our kids exposed to this.
Well,
we don't want it
can't be within a certain distance of schools or houses of worship. It needs to be, there are certain conditions on how it would, where but these
nevertheless,
dispensaries would be
nevertheless,
located.
Nevertheless, I'm a mother or father in Clifton Park, and now they say, okay, even though it's really restrained and they've made it very difficult to get this stuff, do I really want pot smokers in my town? It isn't. They don't smoke. It's in pill form right now. By the way, I think that's
medical.
Medical marijuana in New York.
Yeah, right. But the signal to their brains is, you know, we don't want a bunch of potheads here. Why should we open this door?
Well, part of the discussion, to your point, part of the discussion. I know our town, or the town of village of Cambridge, is dealing with this as well.
There's a proposal for a farm.
An old mushroom plant.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah, there you go. So,
Did you say it's not? Right?
No, it's not.
So
no, you know,
the
mushroom and all that stuff.
I get you.
The connection there is that, from my understanding, in Colorado, one of the things that that happened, and in Washington State too, that as states started to broaden and go from legalized medical marijuana to legalization of marijuana, that the people, the infrastructure was at these dispensaries. It was at the places, it was at these actual, I don't want to call them factories, what do you call them, plants?
Marijuana plants?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, whatever they are, growing facilities. Mm-hmm. And that's where they start. So in the conversations, I think, yes, that is exactly what's happening, because as this broadens, as you say, the genie's out of the bottle, that these are the places, there you go. That these things start to mushroom, if you will.
But there's no question that there's a lot of people who can benefit from medically benefit from marijuana.
Sure.
Prominent are children who have convulsions, and the part of marijuana that they make the medication from doesn't even include the opiates. It's children who receive this don't even get the THC part that would make you intoxicated. It just the other parts are enough to of the cannabis plant are enough to do it. And the fact that that has been denied, people who've had these seizures, it just seems that this is a long time coming, and it's very limited. 20 dispensaries in a state with 20 million people. It's going to be, I think you're right, Alan. I think it's just the beginning, and then it'll be more like in other states.
Let's take a break. We'll go and find out what's happening, and then we'll come back. And we'll round up. We've got a couple stories that we want to talk about. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll be right back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and it's always a nice, I know we all have our favorites, right?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, we have you have your trading cards, you trade off, and it's really fun. it's a rotating panel, and sometimes, that's what we try to do. We have people who are here certain days, and they'll come back, and they're just because you hear them on Wednesday doesn't mean they're never coming back again. They'll be back as soon as they can do it. It's all by the kindness of everyone's heart. The American Psychological Association secretly collaborated with the administration of President George W. Bush to bolster a legal and ethical justification for the torture of prisoners swept up in the post-September 11th war on terror, according to a new report by a group of dissident health professionals and human rights activists. The report is the first to examine the association's role in the interrogation program. It contends using newly disclosed emails that the group's actions to keep psychologists involved in the interrogation program coincided closely with efforts by senior Bush administration officials to salvage the program after the public disclosure in 2004 of graphic photos of prisoner abuse by American military personnel at Abu Ghraib. So if I'm reading this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but it seems like you say, okay, we're going to do this. This is the way we do it. Oh, we've been caught of interrogating people this way. So now we need to back ourselves. So we go to this association for clinical backup. Is that correct? Is that what I'm reading here?
It sounds right.
Yeah. Okay.
You're looking for their stamp of approval,
right,
basically.
Right. I'm saying this is what we did.
Yeah.
Is there anything wrong with that?
So,
right?
So we're talking now about the American Psychological Association, a
yes.
very important group, and sort of the standard, sets the standards in the profession.
Collaborating with the administration
right,
to bolster the argument for
say this
torture.
Is okay. Well, when I read the article, I kept saying to myself, so why? Why are they doing this? Why did they do this? Is this because they have a need out of government? Is this because some of their people participated in this and they have to, sort of make it all right? But it does seem rather strange for providers of health care, mental health care, to be endorsing this kind of stuff. It seems to me to be fairly outrageous.
Well, torture doesn't work. I mean, the Senate Intelligence Committee released the report. They've stopped doing it with these prisoners and this, not just the Senate Intelligence Committee, but people from all perspective, all political perspectives have said time and again that this hurts the U.S. in the long run and it doesn't really get you reliable information.
But, Mike, that addresses the substantive issue. But
sure.
I'm more interested, in terms of the politics of the situation, which is why a series of health providers all of whom we look up to and have tremendous regard for involve themselves in this at all and feel that they have to justify it. I don't get that.
Well, according to the New York Times story that we're discussing, the administration after Abu Ghraib, you know, in the disclosures that prisoners were being tortured in Iraq, the administration was in trouble. And there was public sentiment going against the idea of using torture. And the photographs really brought that home for people, and they wanted it to stop. So they carefully selected the psychologists, many of them who worked in government jobs, to sort of draw this consensus and then sought the broader approval of the organization. I mean, it's really just political. It's like we said, the good housekeeping seal, kind of, you know.
We heard from our very good friend John Faso, major Republican politician who we've had on this show many, many times, who criticizes me and says, Alan needs to be a bit more precise. NSA isn't, quote, listening to calls. Their data links potentially suspicious call numbers primarily to locations abroad, which are known terrorist havens. Before authorities could, quote, listen, they need a court order.
That's correct.
Well, we know that that's correct.
A FISA court.
Yeah. Nevertheless, we read stories again and again about our very good friends like Angela Merkel, the head of her government in Germany had her calls intercepted and listened to. So here's the point, Ray and John and anybody else who wants to take me on this. I don't believe them. I don't believe they're not listening to anybody. I think that they are listening to people, and we know it, and we've had disclosures of that. So, yes, you can change this law, but you haven't got both houses of the Congress up on their rear. One second, Raymond. I just want to finish this one idea before you jump on it, and that is you haven't got both houses of Congress passing this bill with such alacrity because they don't think it's anything besides a sort of, as John says, data links. I think they think much more of it.
Well, remember, this is stateside. So our security apparatus listening to calls outside of the U.S.
of non-citizens.
That has always been a green light to that.
And it remains one in this
bill. In this country, you're not supposed to do that. Listen, and they're not doing that.
Wait a second. Up to there, I heard you. But then you said, so they're not doing that. You don't know that.
In this program, it is metadata.
You don't know what they're doing.
All right. Well, okay. Fair
enough.
And
I do have a pretty good idea what they're doing.
All right.
Hi. Oh, it's you.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, it's for John Faso, too.
Great. How are
you? Look, it's our federal mediator.
Hello. the ombudsman is here.
That's right.
Woman.
Megan Finnegan is with us. As you may know, I think this has been discussed, of course, but the lockbox is now open. The lockbox is open. The lock has been taken off, the lockbox is open to put, or is it already locked?
Well, it's locked. It's locked.
I've ordered it locked.
But people can put things in.
Okay, so there's
Do you have the key, lady?
You know what? I really don't have the key.
Lady
Somebody here
key.
Must have the key.
Okay, so the lockbox is locked, and there's the little slot on the top where you put in the money.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So now we're now accepting donations into that.
Well, we have been since the last fund drive ended, so we do have some in the lockbox, now's the time we really want to kick it off.
Well, how much is in there?
Yeah.
$77,975.
So what we need is, what, $500,000 to match last year's record, right?
Oh, you're going big.
Well, I'm going big. In for a pound, in for an ounce, in for a pound.
All
you
right,
know what I mean?
All right. Yeah, that'd be great.
So look, why not? We did so well, and everybody was so pleased.
We had a 3.5-day fund drive.
And people were stopping me in the street and clapping me on the back and saying, thank you for this. Hey, but the only way you can make it happen is to put something in.
Right.
And by the way, when we do our daily fiscal report, that's not reflected. That's in the lockbox.
Yeah.
So that's segregated money.
So how do you put money in the lockbox?
You put it right. Oh, you go to WMC.org.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can call.
Right. And which you know all about because you run that whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I was leading question.
No,
actually.
I knew that. Yeah. I got that.
It's theater, you know.
And I appreciate that.
All right, fair enough. Hey, is there anything that is an incentive?
Well, yes, actually, Ray. Just in time for summer, we have the wonderful personalized stainless steel water bottle.
And by the way, it's beautiful.
Now, here it is. We'll hold it up for the camera.
It's beautiful. It's got in many colors on the front. It's got the symbol of our. It's got the symbol
of authority.
That was
personalized for Alan.
You can put your own slogan. And yes. So Alan says, could be worse.
There you go. Could be worse.
It's got a sip.
Maybe we'll
spout.
Change that after this hour. I don't know.
It's got a handle.
It's got everything you need.
Yep.
Put it on your bike, on the top.
Carry it on your backpack.
Beautiful.
It's very nice.
It really is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
$125 and you get the personalized water bottle. All we need you to do is to do something, WAMC.org, and go to the lockbox and help us out before the fund drive.
Yeah, can't you help us out?
We'll shorten the fund drive, and that's the name of the game. Megan, thank you very much. Have a lovely weekend. Very nice to see you. Thank you very much. My thanks to Mike Spain. Mike, thank you very much for... here, I'll give you a microphone. Thank you very much for coming in today and filling
Happy
in at the last
here.
Minute. Always very nice. And Raymond, thank you for all you do.
Well, whatevs.
And Alan, thank you for being here.
It's great fun. Great fun.
Excellent. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue with our program. Phyllis Chesler will be with us. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.